In his book of meditations titled The Hungering Dark, theologian Frederick Buechner recalls sitting in a theater audience made up mostly of college students watching the Fellini film La Dolce Vita. If any of you have seen the film and it caused something of a stir back in the 60s, you may remember the opening scene. In it, a helicopter is flying low over the outskirts of Rome. And hanging beneath the aircraft, suspended by a rope, is a life-sized statue of a man dressed in robes with his arms outstretched so that he almost looks as though he's flying by himself. The helicopter flies over a field where some men are working, and when they see it, they wave their hats and yell and jump up and down. Then one of them recognizes the statue and shouts in Italian, "Hey, it's Jesus." Now the camera follows the flight of the helicopter across the city on its way to the Vatican, where it is to be delivered and set in place. And occasionally, the long-range lens of the camera focuses on the statue. But it seems more interested in the reactions of the people on the ground, which range from adoration by crowds of common people who try to follow the helicopter on foot, to the rooftop sunbathers who wave at the men in the news helicopter that is covering the flight of the statue. Buechner writes that as the scene progressed, he noticed a change in the reaction of the students in the audience. At first, they laughed cynically at the absurdity of the whole thing, the sacred statue made of stone and hanging helpless from the sky, and the young people on the ground made of flesh and bursting with life. But then Buechner says the camera zoomed in on the bearded face of Jesus so that it almost filled the screen. And the theater became silent, strangely, eerily silent. You see, as long as Jesus remained at a distance, he was an object of ridicule. But when the students saw his face, and only his face, the laughter stopped. Reflecting on this scene, Buechner concludes, "I think that is much of what the Christian faith is. It is for a moment, just a little while, seeing the face and being still. That is all. There is so much about the whole religious enterprise that seems as out of place in our age as an antique statue is out of place in the sky. But just for the moment itself, say of Christmas, there can be only silence as something comes to life, some spirit, some hope, as something is born again into the world that is so strange and new and precious that not even a cynic can laugh, although he might be tempted to weep. The face in the sky, the child born in the night among beasts, and nothing is ever the same again." Seeing the face and being silent and having something born in your heart. You know, the history of religions is in many ways the story of humanity's attempts to put a face on God, to draw a picture or carve a statue, to make something that you can point to and say to yourself, that is what God is like. The mystery is revealed. But the second of the Ten Commandments says, don't even try it. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth below, or that is in the water under the earth. Indeed, there was a tradition that a person could not see God's face and live. That's why God put Moses in the cleft of a rock and covered him with God's hand so that when God passed by, Moses might see only God's back. And this is where things stood until a baby was born who grew up to be a man who changed the world, a man who taught and healed, a man who brought life and hope, a man who was put to death as a threat to the ruling powers, a man who his followers proclaimed rose from the dead and appeared among them once more. As Luke tells it, this man was born to a young, poor, frightened woman in a cow shed and placed in a feed trough, where he was visited by nameless shepherds. Told by a Gentile, an outsider, this Christmas story focuses on outsiders, people who were considered lowly, people like Mary and the shepherds. Matthew's Christmas story, on the other hand, is more traditional. Told by a Jew, this story focuses on Joseph and on his genealogy and his righteousness under the law. Matthew was more interested in royal wise men than he was in shepherds, and he cared a lot about the parallels between Jesus and Moses. But it is the third Christmas story, the story told in the prologue to John's Gospel, that is the most profound and perhaps the most memorable. It is told not from a Jewish perspective or from a Gentile perspective so much as from a cosmic perspective, proclaiming that Christmas began long before the setting of the stories told by Luke and Matthew. According to John, Christmas began with God in creation, before the beginning of time. The Christmas stories of Luke and Matthew are set in the historical, political context of first century Palestine. John's story is timeless. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory. No one has ever seen God. It is the Son who has made God known. Though told in majestic language, this is still a Christmas story, a story of the down-to-earth birth of Jesus. And it can be captured in 9 simple words. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. This man, this person, was the Word, with God in creation, now at work in human history. Not a graven image, but a fleshly image of the invisible God and of our true selves. And so believers down through the ages have seen in Jesus the incarnation, the enfleshment, the embodiment of God's love for us, the one who was with God in creation, the one who is God. This one became a person as completely human as you and me. Does that mean, then, that the ultimate mystery of God has been revealed to us? Yes and no. The theologian Karl Rahner put it this way. When we say it is Christmas, we mean that God has spoken into the world his last, his deepest, his most beautiful word in the incarnate word, a word that can no longer be revoked because it is God's definitive deed, because it is God himself in the world. And this word means, I love you, the world and humankind. And God has spoken this word by being himself born as a creature. We tell the Christmas story each year in the familiar words of Luke and Matthew, the shepherd version and the wise men version that have inspired so many creches and Christmas pageants. But it is the nine-word version that is the heart of the story. The Word became flesh and lived among us, and nothing is ever the same again. For the story is told and retold in our lives day after day in a language that is ultimately beyond words. Seeing the glory of God in the face of Jesus, being silenced by the wonder of it all, having some faith, some hope, some love born in us. That is Christmas. Amen.